to welcome everyone to the Billy Corgan Media Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. In order to ask a question at that time, simply press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Eric Barnes. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. We appreciate you taking the time to be on the call today. We are thrilled to have rock icon Billy Corgan with us. Last week, as you well know, Billy was announced as the newest member of the TNA team. In his role as senior producer of creative and talent development, Billy will use his passion for professional wrestling and his experience as a gifted writer to develop storylines and talent as part of TNA and the Impact Wrestling brands. Billy will be in Orlando this week for the Impact Live airing on Friday night on Destination America at 9/8 Central, and he will also remain in town for the subsequent tapings May 9th through 11th. We have a lot of folks on the line this afternoon who are going to want to ask Billy questions, so I'll ask that you only ask one question to begin with, and then you can, of course, register to come back into the queue and ask a follow-up question. But please keep it to one question at a time as we begin. And operator, Nicole, we are ready to go ahead and open the lines.
As a reminder, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Mike Johnson with PW Insider.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Good, Mike. Good to talk to you.
Good. Obviously, you've been involved in wrestling for a while, first as a fan, at times as a performer back in the 90s, in the early, I guess early 2000s. God, I'm dating us. I feel so old now. In ECW, and then with Resistance Pro in Chicago doing creative. Talk about your mindset when it comes to what you want to bring to TNA from a creative standpoint that the company hasn't had already, and what you intend to bring to help them kind of further themselves now on Destination America.
Right. Well, you know, overall, I feel I have an asymmetrical approach to brand building that, given my time in music and now subsequently sort of branching into the broader areas of entertainment, including building my Tea House brand, I think I have a pretty good pulse on how to kind of work in the weird space now, which we're all trying to figure out, of what is reality and the public space of ideas and symbolism. And I feel wrestling you see it with WWE, wrestling is still trying to get up to speed with the modern era and the way that it's moving. So I feel I can bring some of those new strategies to kind of reposition the company in people's minds. On a day-to-day level, I'm just bringing my perspective on how TNA can kind of rebrand itself as a wrestling-first company. There seems to be a lot of energy within the company for that. And I would say if there's any priority, it's carving out a singular identity for TNA in the marketplace so that when people think of TNA, they think of TNA stars and they think of TNA's product as being on its own. Obviously part of the long, great history of wrestling, but at the same time, TNA first type programming, which reinforces why you'd want to watch TNA as opposed to somebody else's product. I hope that answers your question.
Sure, I'll jump out and I'll come back with a follow-up when time allows. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Klevick with Slam Wrestling.
Hi, Billy. Super excited to have him on your time. I've been a fan for a long time.
Thanks, buddy.
You've been very, very successful with the Pumpkins as a touring brand, and certainly that is something that TNA should be looking at exploring both for its talent and for the company. Is that something that your success and experience in being on the road and having that established, is that something you bring to the table, both as helping the company and maybe advising some of the newer wrestlers who maybe haven't toured before as to what life on the road is like?
Boy, that's a complex issue to tackle simply, but let me come at it this way. I feel very strongly that TNA needs a developmental system. How that works out and what the realities of that are obviously, bigger issues than I can carve out on my own. But that said, we need to build talent, and we need to have situations where the talent can prosper between TV tapings. Obviously, a lot of the talent works indies, but are they working what I would necessarily call TNA style? And if you find yourself asking what TNA style is, I'd say that's part of the issue. How do we create a TNA style that when the wrestlers are developing, particularly obviously the younger wrestlers, and let's hope it be talent that we would acquire, are they working towards a style that eventually becomes part of the TNA style that, again, brands TNA as a singular company? As far as the Two Ring Product Live goes, I certainly feel I can help in that realm, both as a fan and as somebody who understands what it's like to be up there. Obviously, I don't know what it's like to be a performer in the ring, but I have plenty of experience in relating to what the wrestlers are looking to do and what the agents would be looking to do. So I would hope to contribute in that and get TNA back to a prosperous touring company.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Neil Docking with Daily Mirror.
Hi, good evening, Billy.
Hiya.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic, thank you.
I just wondered, in the past, Jeff Hardy spoken of your friendship, and I wondered whether he was someone you're particularly interested in looking forward to working with, especially given, you know, his experience of perhaps combining, you know, rock music with wrestling.
Well, you know, Jeff's one of the greatest talents wrestling's ever seen. And obviously, you know, we're hurting a little bit now that he's injured because we need him on the roster. He's such a valuable member of TNA. Jeff's an interesting case because he truly is a free spirit. And I have had conversations with him probably going back over 10 years about how to sort of find some sort of balance between what he wants to do musically and what he wants to do in wrestling. So I, having had those conversations with him before, I would hope that we continue those conversations because, you know, Jeff is an out-of-the-box thinker, you know, my first thought is, have we utilized everything that Jeff would do out of the box to help both get him over as a wrestler and also bring a different kind of attention to TNA? And I would really look forward to working with him on those types of things.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Fishman with Miami Herald.
Hey, Billy. Good talking to you again. My question is in relates to, if you could just take us back through the timeline of when all this happened and why this moment in time was this decision to be made, because I remember a couple of years ago there was a lot of talk about you coming in as far as a wrestling organization and, you know, in some sort of facet. And also, did you have to present maybe a proposal? And if you could just give an idea of that proposal when you had those meetings with TNA where they also made the decision to have you on board?
Sure. Well, I think if there's any sort of timeline genesis beyond me just having a personal relationship with Dixie that goes back a good many years, I guess it would be 7 to 8, maybe even longer. I pitched her on an idea to combine what I was looking to do with Resistance Pro vis-a-vis doing a reality show that maybe there was some sort of intersection that might help TNA and we could partner up. She didn't feel that was a good fit at the time, which was totally okay, and I went in a different direction, and I obviously made the deal with AMC. Which took a lot longer. So that gives you some timeline when I talked to Dixie about it. It was really in its infancy, and she was one of the first people I talked to because I obviously wanted her feedback, because she's been good like that for me as well. As far as this particular timeline, I came back off tour, hadn't realized she'd been messaging me. I have to change my number fairly regularly because of fan-type stuff. So she'd been messaging me on Twitter, DM, hadn't seen him, and I was getting little sad faces, like, why won't you call me back? And I called her up, and I think it was on a Sunday maybe even, and we had a conversation, and she basically said, how would you like to come in on creative? And I pinched myself and said, I would love the opportunity. And I flew down to Nashville, and an hour later I was sitting in booking meetings, and we were going at it. And I felt at home the moment I walked through the door. I mean, I've been in the offices before. I know a lot of people in the company. Even just, you know, just had conversations where, you know, people aren't strangers to you. So I really felt like I was home walking through the doors, and nothing that's happened since has changed my mind on that. So I hope that answers your question.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Duke with Wave 102 FM.
Hi, Billy. Thanks for taking our questions today.
Certainly.
My question is more in regards to the UK. You know, TNA is immensely popular here in the UK, and it has been said that maybe even more so than it is in the States. You know, there's been a lot of chat with you coming in, being, you know, this is going to change, that is going to change, I'm going to add this. Is there anything in particular in TNA on the creative side that you maybe plan to maintain and plan to keep, you know, because, you know, certainly us in the UK are very happy with the TNA product.
Can you just define what you mean by that as, like, who I would keep? Or I just want to make sure I answer your question.
Not particularly who you would keep. You know, any particular aspects of TNA creative, any stories that you actually like, that you enjoy in TNA.
Oh, I understand. Yeah. Well, I think certainly right away you could look at the success of Drew Galloway with The Rising and Rockstar Spud, uh-huh. who I think is right now one of the best promos in the business. I'm a big believer that you've got to take talent from the source that they come from and work at that. I believe, you know, I grew up in the old AWA days where ethnicity, personal story and background were interwoven with your angles. So I would look to, as it pertains to the UK, I would look to further those storylines and deepen them from a localized point of view and talk to the talent and how they'd like to get over, because I think that's key to people identifying with wrestlers for different reasons. So, you know, vis-a-vis, if you have people who identify with someone from a particular place and the product is successful in those places, you want to further deepen why those fans there would be interested in the story, the journey story of that particular talent. Does that make sense? I know it's a little convoluted, but.
That makes perfect sense, Billy. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
As a reminder, in order to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's *1. The next question comes from the line of John Pollock with White Network.
Hi there, Billy. I just wanted to ask you a question in terms of your own views towards the pay-per-view model, and if you see TNA getting back to a model where it is 12 months a year, if you think that the product maybe peak itself for maybe quarterly events each year, just your overall thoughts of TNA and its relationship with pay-per-view.
On that particular question, I'd have to speak a little bit more like a fan than an employee. I don't really understand yet and have not had conversations, at least any time recently, although I have in the past, with Dixie about how the pay-per-view model works in their business thinking in terms of budgets and goals. If I'm speaking like a punter about it, I have to say that there seems to be a certain movement in the business away from the pay-per-view model. And it's understandable why, in the age of both social media and the amount of piracy that goes on. Obviously, fans will find these events, but they won't always pay for them. And, you know, I'm sure we're all guilty of that. I've done it, you know. So that said, what I would probably look towards would be something more along the lines of, is there a new model that is similar to the pay-per-view model but is more sort of commensurate with the social media age? That creates maybe sort of different destination points. Because certainly as a wrestling fan, you want those bigger payoffs. And there's something really great about, like, say, a Slammiversary, where you feel that sort of end of year and beginning of new year delineation point for storylines and sort of setting the company motto in the year ahead. So I think those are still very important events, but whether or not they fit into an economic/pay-per-view model that makes sense for TNA, I can't speak to that yet.
All right, thanks very much.
The next question comes from the line of David Dunn with NBPWI.
Hey there, Billy. You just touched on it a moment ago, mentioning the AWA days. I was just looking for a bit of background on yourself as a wrestling fan. What's sort of your earliest memory of watching wrestling, and was there a particular thing that hooked you in and made you a fan, or did it happen, you know, gradually over time?
Sure. Well, you know, I lived with my great-grandmother when I was very little, and I remember them, her and my grandfather, watching wrestling in the house. They would watch professional wrestling, they would watch roller derby, and they watched hockey, which back then had a lot of fights. So I remember there was a lot of that when I was a little kid. And then on my own, I gravitated to the Bob Luce promotion in Chicago, which was a very interesting situation in that you had AWA talent coming down from Minnesota, and then you had Dick the Bruiser out of Indiana's promotion coming over. So you had these kind of super cards, which, of course, as a little kid, I didn't realize. But I saw a lot of these men in their prime in angles and storylines that none of the rest of the country saw. So, you know, I would see, you know, the Crusher versus Gagne when I was about 6-7 years old. I mean, yeah, they maybe been towards the end of their career, but they were still very much in their prime as far as how they got over. So that formed a lot of my thinking as far as what makes sense on a fundamental level about wrestling, and I think those tenets don't change no matter what the era is. The question for me always is, can you update those bedrock philosophical points into the future model, which is similar to what I have to do with music. I mean, I learned rock and roll from the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, but I've had to learn how to update those principles into the modern world, and I think that's actually a fun challenge to take on.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Dan Murphy with PWI.
Hey, Billy. Just wanted to kind of check in. With this new position, are you going to be in charge of essentially scouting new talent, hiring and firing and personnel, or is this just going to be creative working with the current staff that's on hand?
Well, in terms of hiring and firing, I would assume that I'm part of that decision-making process, but that's very much Big and Dixie's department. I've seen some things where people sort of put me in charge of things that I'm definitely not in charge of. That said, when it comes to the developmental aspect, there's a lot of focus in the company right now on the TV product, which isn't a bad thing. I think it's good because the television product is improving. But I'm pushing really, really hard to, if I run anything, I would love to run developmental. I would love to put people in place and have the resources to create a TNA developmental system. Again, to create stars that are wholly identified with TNA, because I think if we can do that, then it's to our glory to do so. I mean, obviously there are great talents that have come over from other rosters, and that's not a problem, and it'll never be a problem. But at the end of the day, I think the real glory here is to create our own stars and create our own singular identity in the marketplace.
Terrific. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Price with Icon vs. Icon.
Hey, Billy. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us today.
Thank you.
My question is, you spent the better part of your life in the music industry. I was curious, now that you're involved with wrestling and, you know, you have a bit of a history with it, what are some of the biggest parallels you've seen between the behind-the-scenes in the music industry and the behind-the-scenes in professional wrestling?
It's a great question, and what I would say to it is, like any company where you have a lot of moving parts, it's easy, and it's not personal sometimes, that particular talents get overlooked or set aside because of a particular direction that's happening. I've been in that situation at a label where having coming off massive success, and suddenly there's a regime change, and they kind of want to take the company in a different direction, and suddenly I'm appealing to somebody who doesn't understand my vision and what I feel made me successful. And I think that you see a lot of that in the wrestling business, where there are unhappy people everywhere because they don't feel they're getting their push, or they don't feel they're getting the chance to shine. And look, every locker room has its good apples and its bad apples. The question is, can you create a talent relationship? And this is something I hope to do, and I feel I did it in Resistance Pro. Can you create a talent relationship where you feel you're trying to take into account everybody's concerns and their abilities, and of course, part of that is proper scouting and proper observation of where people are in their career and even in their head, and can you turn around and bring that to the benefit of not only them but to the company? And I don't think it's any different than when you have a baseball team that has a lot of talent. They might bring in a new manager, and that person sort of changes the culture just enough. I'm not complaining about TNA culture. I think it's a good culture. But can I add to that where talent maybe feels a different opportunity with me, where maybe somebody who had been overlooked or maybe not seen in a particular light might get a different opportunity with me there, and I hope to provide those opportunities.
Terrific. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Dara O'Connor with The Sun.
Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Billy. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. You mentioned a definite TNA style and your need for a developmental system to be worked on. What do you envision as a TNA style? You know, harkening back to the X Division, that was when people said it was like one of the biggest times for TNA. Is that kind of what you want to go for?
I think that's tough. I'm old school. And I remember standing backstage at a TNA taping probably 6 years ago, could have been longer, with Jim Cornette. And I'd say Jim and I agree on this in the old school model. You have to build from size down. I love cruiserweight, X division wrestling. Always been a fan, and there are some incredible talents out there right now that are doing things that we've never seen before in a wrestling ring. But I still think that you've got to build from size down. It doesn't mean you put big lugs in there who can't work. It means you got to find big lugs who can work. There's something about the sort of law of the jungle that says the bigger guy should be able to win. And when you have big guys, like an Abyss, for example, who's a great talent and who can move and who knows how to sell a story, that guy can get a lot of people over that another cruiserweight couldn't do against another cruiserweight. So that's a belief in a particular wrestling dynamic.
Okay. Thank you very much, Billy.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Neil Dawkins with Daily Mirror.
Hi, Billy. You've talked this evening about your interest in developmental and developing talents. And I wanted to ask you a question really about your thoughts on the role of music in wrestling and whether, in particular, ring entrances, and whether in your new creative role that's something you'd be looking to have a hand in and say in the entrance music that perhaps wrestlers emerge to, because it can be so important to their character, and almost an entrance theme can say more than anything before the wrestlers even hit the ring.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I have some experience in this regard. A lot of times I think the music in any promotion falls into like very obvious things, like the guy comes out to a metal song or something, and it sounds like ubiquitous Alice in Chains or something, right? Obviously, as a musician, I'm not a big fan of that. I think just like a movie soundtrack, a counter piece of music can tell some amazing stories. I think back to the Pride promotion, the MMA promotion out of Japan, and I remember watching Emelianenko come out to a match one time, and they had like falling snow, and it was like soft piano music, and it was incredible. It gave me goosebumps. It was like it made me want to see something in this fight. It brought out an epic aspect of his character when he was still very much on top that some jarhead metal song wouldn't have done. So to answer your question more fully, can we look at those things in a different way? And we did some of that in Resistance Pro with Starry was the artist, Sherry Shaw did the music with her partner, and we were doing things that were really unexpected. And believe it or not, we got some pushback from the wrestlers because they were used to these kind of jarhead metal themes. They felt like, this doesn't bring me enough energy. But you've seen, for example, with other gimmicks where a different kind of song can really define a character before they even make one move to the ring or they even have to open their mouths. So I hope to bring a greater level of sophistication. That's not a complaint. I would say I would just hope to add to that picture.
Yeah, one that springs to mind is Mankind in his early days, where he had almost the sort of like, he had two theme songs, I think, one for when he came out, and one after the match that was almost like a butterfly, a sort of effect, someone springing out, clever things can be done, can't they?
Yeah, I think movies show you that the right piece of music with the right piece of film, it's not always playing to type. Like, we've all seen the Transformers type movie where everything's going to hell and it's like a spooky piece of music. It's like the complete opposite of what it should be, And I think there needs to be more of that for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Christian Burns with Power Wrestling Germany.
Hey, Billy. Hello from Cologne in Germany. How are you today?
Very good. Nice to talk to you. I love Cologne, so...
Yeah, great place. I've seen you before, like 2 years ago in a live music hall, but that's for another day. My question is about the current TV format. I think WWE basically hasn't changed its way how they present their television since the Attitude Era, and Impact has been presented in the same way in years as well. I think there are some changes to be made to freshen up the company as a whole in the way they present the television and maybe also to attract a different audience.
Is that a question or a statement? Sorry, just trying to understand.
No, I think it's a question. So where do you think, do you have ideas on how to change the way that television is presented? Is that something that is on your mind as well?
Sure. And again, I say this without always understanding all the dynamics, because until I talk to Dixie about certain things, I might just be talking off the top of my head. Because obviously, you know, we all want a zillion dollars to spend, but we always don't have it, and we always don't have the platforms to do it. I would say this. Let's assume, because we can talk pie-in-the-sky stuff very easily, and there's a million ideas that I would have. But here's one thing I see. I don't see anybody, any company in the world, truly using social media to its greatest potential vis-a-vis how to get wrestlers and angles over. I think there's still a great struggle in the wrestling business how to properly use that. And I'll give you a perfect example. If you go to most wrestlers' Twitter, and it doesn't matter what company they work for, they might be tweeting pictures of their cats, but they're supposed to be a heel. You know, that does cause a level of confusion in the marketplace. So, for example, should an individual talent have a separate account that is just their gimmick account, so that everything that they tweet or put up on Facebook from those accounts are consistent with their character? Or do we want basically kind of a worked shoot feel where I'm this in the ring and I'm this in my real life? Can we apply both theories and somehow gain just as much as if we watch a movie star behind the scenes and then we go and see their movie and we understand there's a suspension of disbelief? But I've yet to see anybody get it right. And I think there's a great opportunity there for TNA to come in with a greater level of sophistication to tell stories. Obviously, there's some effort in that regard, but I've yet to see it. And look, when we say TV these days, I mean, yes, there is a destination, no pun intended, there's a destination network that we want everybody watching on Friday. But that said, getting them there, the quickest way you get them there is through the internet. And why are we not using internet as an addendum to television in a way that television both supports itself in the social media and then in the traditional media? I feel that's still not been gotten right by anybody.
Oh, sure. But there's also the question, if you have guys on Twitter and so on, I mean, for fans, it's great that they are more accessible now, but at the same time, you have guys who may break character, or like what has been left of kayfabe, so to say, is gone forever. So I think maybe there's some rethinking to be done there.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I think you have to make a philosophical decision, and then you have to amplify that philosophical decision. Look, I see this with my fans, okay, and I'm going to use the wrestling term. There are smart mark Smashing Pumpkin fans who think they know everything about me, but the percentage of smart mark fans in my world is probably very similar to the percentage of smart mark fans in the wrestling world. It is a minority. Most of the people watching are watching products very casually. So do they need assistance to further invest in storylines and character, or do we want them investing in the personal story behind the person? Like, this is the photo I took today when I was training. Here's me hanging out with my dog. Here's me hanging out with my girlfriend. Here's me getting married. Does that help or hurt? But I think you have to make a philosophical decision. You have to go down that particular road harder than it's gone down.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Powell with ProWrestling.net.
Hey, Billy, kind of a two-part question for you. I guess just on average, how much time do you intend to spend working on TNA on a weekly basis? And also, you know, with you touring and making the album, is there some advantage to actually getting away from the product and having kind of that outsider perspective rather than being in the trenches and maybe even getting caught up inside the pro wrestling bubble?
Good question. Right now I'm spending probably 60 hours a week on TNA. it's driving my friends here in the studio a little crazy, because literally I'm 1 hour with music and I'm running to a telephone call, or I'm on my phone working with the creative on what's happening. And so I'm still working out those balances, but it's certainly a full-time vocation. And like any creative person, it's always spinning in my mind how to make the product better. As far as the inside-outside perspective, I think that's a difficult balance because, and this goes back to a recent conversation I had with Big, it's like I've got to be enough in the company that I'm not coming in and always sort of picking apart particular movements, if that makes any sense. You know, like I use the analogy sometimes that cultures are like battleships, and I know this even from Smashing Pumpkins culture. It's not always easy just to flip one switch and expect everything to change. And if you don't understand the thinking behind the decision-making, it's very easy to criticize, but you may not understand that maybe somebody's injured or maybe there's a particular reason. In some cases, even somebody's contract might be up and they don't want to go in a particular direction with the talent, even though, quote unquote, it makes sense. So I feel I have to be enough in the foundational culture, and we're working that out day to day, and it's getting better every day, where I am more in on the foundational level than maybe sort of an outsider. Is there a downside there where maybe I get too inside the company thinking absolutely? But I think I'm very used to thinking in and out of the box in my own musical life. And, you know, I'm not a big believer in cheap heat. You know, I think things take a lot of time to develop properly. Certainly building the Smashing Pumpkin Starship has taken a long time to even be up to speed with the world we live in today. So I hope that answers the question.
It does, and best of luck with the new gig.
Thank you, buddy.
Your next question comes from the line of Ethan Nash with Wrestle Hustle.
G'day, Billy. It's great to speak with you today. You've spoken about the similarities between the Smashing Pumpkins world and now your creative role in TNA. I just want to focus on your writing specifically, and that is, can you describe how your writing with the Pumpkins has developed or progressed from the angsty young rocker in the 20s to now, and how that ability to adapt or evolve to a changing environment will resonate and benefit with your work with TNA?
I think that's a great question. I think ultimately the lesson I've learned is you've always got to write for where you are today. And where that would apply, for example, with TNA is you have to find those storylines and you have to find those ideas that will resonate with the audience today. Everybody's got their sentimental idea of what works for wrestling. I thought it was fascinating, for example, when Paul Heyman talked about how he almost came to TNA, how he would have taken the product in a more MMA direction because he felt that was some of the greatest stories were being told in MMA, and he was going to try to emulate that. And I think that's a very good example of how you can sort of update your thinking into a form that's working. But going back to the Pumpkins part of the question, you always have to know who you are. And I think that at times TNA struggle to know who they are through the different regimes. And in talking to Dixie at great length about these subjects, it's like it's part of my job is to really understand her vision. It's very interesting because she does have a very particular vision. And so a lot of times what looks like maybe things aren't going in the right direction has more been that the people that came in didn't fulfill the promise of maybe what they thought they were offering or what she thought they were offering. And so part of my effort here is to try to really get on the same page of what she's looking at from a business model on down so that we can represent it in a very active way. And I feel really lucky in this regard because coming back with the Pumpkins, I had some naive assumptions in 2007. I thought I could just pick up where I left off, and that's not how it's worked. I've had to sort of adjust as I went. I had to deal with an aging audience. I had to deal with people's sentimental ideas about what kind of music I should do. How do I create new opportunities for myself in the marketplace? In many ways, I've created new opportunities by going outside the box in places where people shouldn't go. Being a part of wrestling has been one of them. I've been heavily criticized in the music world for being involved in professional wrestling, and I refuse to give that position up. Partially because I think my role in my musical culture is to be independent. And how can I be independent if I don't represent who I truly am? If I have to hide certain parts of myself to get over with my musical crowd, then I'm really not myself. So, having had those experiences, I'm a staunch defender of the idea that the stronger an identity TNA can build from the outside, the much harder it will be for us to move forward in the marketplace with strength and like let's call it courage, because I think that's what you need to do. You do need to take chances.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. If I could just expand a little bit on that real quickly. You spoke about, I read that you'd like to, if you got the chance, to bring in modern day focal points such as transgender issues, equal rights. What are some of the advantages and dangers of stepping out of the box and exploring new territory like this, just expanding on from what you said?
Well, with sophistication comes a greater opportunity for it to be misunderstood. And I recently did an article for Esquire where we talked about, if anybody remembers, the Archie Bunker character on All in the Family. He was an obvious bigot. And through his being bigoted, different stories were able to be told because he, would, in essence, was sort of a heel. Over time, he became a more sympathetic character as you started to empathize with his own, bias. it's not to say his bias was correct. You almost felt sorry for him because he was kind of like an aging man afraid of a changing world. That's a very sophisticated story to tell. Could we tell stories like that in the wrestling ring? Because, and this is a very overly simplistic point, but I hope you follow what I'm saying. If we're talking about baby faces and heels, right, why wouldn't a heel use everything in his arsenal to get under the skin of the baby face, including using bias over his race or background against it? Obviously, we live in a PC culture, and we have to be very careful about how we tell those stories. But in those stories and in the rendering of good over evil, intelligence and suppleness over stupidity, we can tell a far more sophisticated story than, you know, you stole my girlfriend, you're a bad guy. And also I've seen at different times, and I believe this too, you also have to know where the limits are. For example, a wrestler should never ever say, I'm going to kill you. You know what I'm saying? Because that takes us out of belief. Because for a professional wrestler to say, I'm going to kill you, the chances of that happening are nil. So we should always know where the limitations are in the product. But is professional wrestling ripe for a social kind of revolution within the company, in the companies? Absolutely. And I think it's high time that wrestling become more of a leader in this regard than a follower.
I completely understand. Brilliant stuff, mate. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today, and I wish you all the best with your future endeavors with TNA.
Thank you, buddy.
The next question comes from the line of George Ribello with Wrestling PT.
Hi, Billy. How are you?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Billy, as a TNA fan, I must say you are eating the bullseye in so many aspects, and as a TNA fan, you really are pointing out some aspects that TNA must develop. And I would like to ask you, how much input are you going to have on the product? And of course, TNA is an established company, so you have to face all the policies, all the barriers. How do you think you can overcome those backstage politics?
Right. Understood. Here's what I would say. I'm lucky in that I'm a successful person in my own regard. So the only way I would have taken this opportunity is if I felt that my ideas would get an equal airing at the table. And so far, everything that I've brought to the table has been taken seriously, and where it's been agreed upon, it's been acted upon, and where somebody says that may not be right for us, I actually am told why they don't think it works. So my experience so far in TNA is that there's no obstacle, and it's a meritocracy. Basically, whoever has the best idea wins. And that's the right kind of competition. And I respect the people I'm working with. And being in those booking meetings, which I was when I was down in Nashville, I felt it was a fantastic atmosphere because every time I came up with an idea that they liked, which they liked many, we worked on the idea together, and the idea was always better than if I booked it on my own or where we started from. So far, all my experiences are very good. I've dealt with wrestling politics before, albeit on a smaller level, but I've certainly been around wrestling companies for years, certainly heard plenty of talent complain about wrestling politics, and as an artist myself, I have maybe a different relationship to how talent can view the monolith of a corporate office. You know, I've railed plenty of my life at record labels, and I still am. But the point is that I understand that there has to be that sort of balance there between the front office and what goes on with talent. And at least when I'm sitting in these meetings, I have a different understanding of how the talent might perceive decision-making from the top down, having been in that position myself many, many times.
All right. And I really hope you can pass the message through because you have great, great ideas. And
thank you. Thank you, buddy.
Your next question comes from the line of Phillips Hamilton with Bain Media.
Hi, Billy. I just wanted to ask you, at the moment, your role is very much backstage and creative and production. Do you think we may see you on television at some point?
You know, I don't really see myself in a televised role. I certainly would listen if Dixie or Big felt like it was a place for me to be. I'm a firm believer in that everything that goes on within the company is about getting the talent over, which is the talent in the ring. I've been in the ring. I've done stuff in the ring. I don't really necessarily belong in a ring, But if there was something there, whether it was an angle or commentary or even a maybe a, let's call it a perspective, or maybe I do updates online talking about how I think the product is working, whatever I can do, I'm more than willing to do. But at the end of the day, and I'm going to say this up front, and I'll probably have to say it 20 more times, I didn't get take this job to make it about me. I really love the idea of being a participant in a bigger dynamic. I have plenty of control in my own world, and I like the team effort here. I like the team I'm working with, and my job is to participate in that process and get the talent over. If we get the talent over, there's plenty of credit to go around for everybody, and I would love to share in that.
That's great. Thanks, Billy. Good luck with the row.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Dan Murphy with PWI.
I had a second question for you here, Billy, and the last caller kind of mentioned it about you being an on-air figure. Over the past decade or so, really, there's been a lot of relaunches. WCW has had a few when they brought in Russo and Bischoff, and that one was pretty crazy where they vacated all titles and kind of started from scratch. A few years ago in TNA, when Hogan and Bischoff came in, they kind of had a brand new face on things too. Starting this Friday, your involvement with the live show on Impact, do you foresee there being a very big kind of abrupt, noticeable change in direction, or do you want this to be more of a kind of gradual kind of movement over?
Great question. I would say it's a little bit more like what we're seeing here with my team, the Chicago Cubs, if you follow baseball at all. You know, the Ricketts family bought the team, took a step backwards to start building a franchise from the ground up that was going to be successful and profitable and consistent in years to come, which has included all sorts of changes, which I don't have to get into. So I'm not a big believer in wave a magic wand or what they call magical thinking. You have a company here with a 13-year history, fans that do like the product, and, of course, fans that have been turned off by the product. So I don't think real change comes quickly. I think it's systemic. I think it comes from the ground up. And that's what I'm saying. If I was even if you handed me the keys to the whole kingdom, I would still have to build an infrastructure. And that's not to complain about the infrastructure that's there. I actually like the infrastructure that's there. And I found that I can move within it very, very readily and quickly, and there's not been one obstacle to my thinking yet. But if I'm going to affect real change, and I'm looking at it from the perspective of someone who's built million-dollar businesses, it's got to be from the bottom up, and that's why my biggest harp would be talent development. Let's call it a low-cost, high-yield model where a Dixie Carter or a John Gabura can look and say, okay, we're going to give you this amount of budget, or you're going to create this type of system, and this is what we hope to yield out of that, just like a major league franchise would look and say, can we get this many stars out of our developmental league to make our main roster within a particular period of time? And I think the difficulty here was without development, there's always that oxygen. There's not enough oxygen to go around to build young stars that are TNA branded from the bottom up. And I think the success you're seeing, particularly with WWE vis-a-vis NXT, even points to this even more. There's a lot of excitement on the street about what they're doing with NXT because you see a younger, fresher sort of opportunity there. And I think TNA can do its own version of that very, very readily, and we can go off in our own direction so that 5 years from now, 7 years from now, TNA is a singly branded company, and it's, you know, hopefully the Beatles and the Stones or something, you know, commensurate to that. And I, to me, the biggest mistake that's been made over and over again is trying to compete, basically this versus that. I think those days are over. I think the world is so wide, and there's so many different people who are interested in things for so many different reasons, that if TNA builds its own brand from the bottom up, kind of has that shift in systemic culture from the bottom up, and it's supported, and hopefully, you know, obviously I'm not there yet within the company, then TNA should stand completely on its own. And then there'll be fans of the product that don't have to make a choice, and it's not this product or that product. It's strictly more good, and more is for everybody.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
And we do have approximately 10 minutes remaining for Q&A. The next question will come from Mike Johnson with PW Insider.
Hey, Billy. Nice to talk to you again. One thing we haven't talked about really is talent. Usually when there's a creative changeover in pro wrestling, there are talents who disappear and there's talents that come in because of the creative vision of the new regime. How much of a talent changeover should we be looking at in the next couple of weeks? And there's a lot of guys that you used in Resistance Pro. Jay Bradley comes to mind as someone who had a lot of potential but never really had a chance to use it on the national scene. Should we expect to see these guys kind of coming in or getting dark matches or at least being pitched to TNA management? Where do you stand on that? And I know you can't give your whole – you can't just give away your whole battle plan here, but how much are we looking at in terms of a changeover in the current talent?
Right. Okay, great. Number one, I posed the question quite recently, can I bring talent in? And they said, absolutely, we'll try anybody out you want to try out. So I've already got people that I work with coming in for a dark match this upcoming weekend, which is awesome because that's all I would ask for the opportunity to bring in talent that I think can to benefit the televised product immediately, not in the future, immediately. Okay. Secondarily, as far as roster goes, I'm not in a position to make any suggestion, pro or con, on the roster other than my own eyes and what I've seen. And as anybody knows, there's things that you cannot pick up on television. There's things that you see backstage and in conversations with people. You can kind of see where people are headed in their own heads. You can see who's in shape. You can see who's hungry. And I think that sort of part of it I've yet to make any kind of assessment on. Do I have the power to pick up the phone and I say, I think you should let go of somebody? I have the power to make the call. Does that mean that person would disappear because I said so? No, I don't think so. I don't think I have that kind of power, nor have I built that kind of credibility. But I do think I can, in the very near term, assist the thing. And you brought up, for example, Jay Bradley. Jay Bradley, 6'5", still in his physical prime, was getting over on, and obviously I was paying close attention, was getting on over on TNA television, and then boom, he was gone. And I haven't, you know, picked up the phone and asked anybody what happened. Maybe he made somebody mad. I don't know. But from my perspective as a televised viewer, a television viewer, I thought Jay was getting over. So certainly I would love for people like Jay to get a fresh opportunity in the company, if only in part because I think I can work with Jay at a level that maybe somebody else who doesn't know him can't. He's a little bit of a surly character, but isn't that what you want in a big heel who's a great talent?
I agree when it comes to Bradley.
What's that?
I said when it comes to Bradley, I agree with everything you're saying.
Right. And maybe I can be a different kind of conduit with particular talent. Right now, and I don't think this is any secret, there's a huge focus in the company on getting the television product right. And obviously, you know, with the move to Destination America and sort of reassessing the playing field with a partner in America that's much more motivated to get the product right. Those are all great things. So with that focus, you know, pertaining to an earlier question, maybe I can pull it a little more outside the lines and see something in the talent that maybe somebody in the bubble doesn't necessarily see. But at the end of the day, it's one thing to bring in your boys and say, yeah, put this guy over or give this guy a chance. It's another thing to bring in talent that you know will positively contribute to the roster and create the right kind of competition from the ground up, because you want a hungry, lean company with talent that is all moving forward, because once the talent believes it, they start working a lot harder too. And I did see that written in Resistance Pro, again, albeit at a smaller level. But when I was at the beginning of Resistance Pro, we had national talent coming in, ROH guys. Some of those people didn't want to listen to me because as far as they were concerned, I had no reason even being there. I had to build credibility within the company, and the move towards AMC and the positive strides I made in public, I was eventually able to modulate my message and modulate what the point of Resistance Pro was, where we had talent wanting to come in and work at Resistance Pro because they saw it as a great opportunity for their future. So, again, I want to be in that same position in TNA. I really want to be, and maybe it's not the right word, it sounds like a wrestling world, I really want to be unleashed where I have access to all the available talent and I can start making real critical evaluations of talent that I could think can impact the televised product tomorrow. I want to create that opportunity. I want to create that competition, and I'm determined to do it because I know there are talents. Like somebody asked me the other day, I think it was when I was doing Jericho's podcast. He said, how many people do you know right now personally that you think can affect the TNA roster in a good way? And I said 6 to 8, and he was very, very surprised. But because I work with those people intimately and I was preparing them for TV vis-a-vis the AMC show, I know what they can do on television. And I even had feedback from AMC saying, wow, these people are popping through the lens like we can't believe. And these were people who weren't even wrestling fans, which is the right kind of feedback. You want people who create a curiosity from the non-wrestling fan or the casual wrestling fan. And sometimes wrestling falls, as a business, falls into that, you know, here's the jacked up guy with, you know, tribal tattoos, let's stick him out there. I think wrestling's ready for a whole new cast of characters, and they are out there, and you see them, and the Jeff Hardys of the world, obviously an earlier generation, prove that outliers can really go to the top.
All right, I thank you so much for your time, and yeah, just a quick follow up. You mentioned the AMC thing a couple of times. I know AMC shut down their reality end. Where does that project even stand anymore? Is that completely dead, or is it just kind of percolating?
DOA.
All right. Thank you.
It was hanging. As of a few months ago, it was still being pitched, and it was going around, and there was still some hope to revive it, albeit with the R-Pro management cut out of it because of the falling out that went there. And I think it's very telling that when I left Resistance Pro, three quarters of the roster followed me, without me politicking them, so that tells you something. So there was still a very deep interest that if we could revive that show and kind of carry on from the storyline point that it was left at, that there was a successful show there to be had. And every indication I had from AMC was that they thought they had a big show. The decision to cut the reality slate came from a much higher source than I was working with. But once Dixie called me and offered me this job, that's DOA, because this is the major leagues, and this is an opportunity that basically fulfills everything I could hope for in the other situation. Times 10.
And we do have approximately 2 minutes remaining for Q&A. We have Anthony Bruce with Wrestles Radio.
Hi, Billy. How are you?
Very good. Thank you, buddy.
My question is, what's for you the biggest asset of TNA?
Can you be a little more specific?
In general, for you, it's the organization or the wrestlers or the creativity?
I think what's really attractive is the fact that they've really built well in international markets. You know, particularly in the UK. I think there's some incredible opportunities there. And it also tells us that we can tell maybe a wider swath of stories than are always necessarily American-centric. As somebody who's traveled the world, I think it's fascinating. And, of course, as a kid, I remember, although these characters were presented much more stereotypically and which would be non-PC today, but some of the storylines that stick out in my head was was being introduced to characters like the Sheik, the Iron Sheik, you know, where I, you know, as a kid, I didn't know where he was coming from, but I certainly understood his ideology, albeit in the overly simplifications of wrestling. I think we can tell new types of stories from new parts of the world and bring in talents. And then because of TNA's international reach, there might be a different way to tell stories about faces and heels than has been the historical norm.
Thanks for the answer.
Anybody else? Anybody there?
We have a question from Jason Clevitt with Slam Wrestling.
Hi, Billy. You've got a pretty extensive touring schedule coming up, both some shows just as the Pumpkins and co-headlining with Marilyn Manson. You mentioned earlier that you have you've been spending a lot of time on TNA already. So how are you going to balance your TNA obligations with being a musician on the road this summer?
Well, the good news is that it's an understood thing from the beginning that can't, you know, sort of, that's not going to change. Luckily I have a relationship, particularly with Dixie, where, you know, that's understood and there's no issue there. And I think the fact that Dixie knows I will give TNA, everything I have, in the cracks of all that, you know, I'll do my best. Obviously it's going to be harder for me to do that when I'm not able to travel to a particular taping. And I give you a perfect example because I don't know yet. You know, obviously the date for Slammiversary was announced, and I think I'm preparing at that time for the acoustic tour, and I will probably literally do something along the lines of, like, get up at 8 in the morning, rehearse, get on a plane, fly down for Slammiversary and then have to fly home the next day, even if it means I got to miss some taping, to do my rehearsals. Or I've even talked about the option of actually moving my rehearsals to where the tapings would be so that I can be there to both work for TNA. So I think that shows you the level of dedication that I'm in for. I don't view this very casually. I didn't take an opportunity like this to fail. The greatest thing I can hope for is if we talk a year from now, you'll see I've had a positive contribution to the product, and everything I'm talking about, all these big ideas, will actually start kind of locking into place where there'll be real energy and buzz around the company in a way that maybe we haven't seen before. And hopefully you'd be able to trace that back to me, and then by extension, give the credit to people where the credit is due. You know, to John and Dixie for having the courage to bring somebody like me in and being willing to listen to a completely different outside perspective to try to kickstart something that maybe is not always easy to do from within wrestling culture. If we talk from a year from now and it's the same, you know, I'll probably tell you a slightly different story. The things that I'm doing, hopefully, that are long-term, or the things that I can point to towards the future. So hopefully we're telling a positive story, you know, a year from now.
Thanks, Billy. It's been a real pleasure listening.
Thank you.
And that does conclude the amount of time that we have for Q&A. I would now like to turn the conference back to Mr. Eric Barnes for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you so much, Billy, for taking time to answer the questions today. And thank you all for joining this call. Please do make sure that you tune in to Impact Wrestling this Friday night as we broadcast live on Destination America at 9/8 Central. And we will be back in touch with you all for our next conference call. And it will likely be in the next month or so.